Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
What the fuck happened to you, man? Your ass used to be beautiful.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Underrated. This is a podcast where we discuss the films that we find underrated, underappreciated, or the ones that have just slipped under the radar and passed most people by. I am one of your hosts, Derek McDuff. And joining me, as always, are Ariel Ortiz.
Hello.
And Alan Torres.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
And today, we're going to be doing a special episode. This episode was one picked by a Patreon producer of ours. Her art study, a.k.a. Chelsea, picked this movie for us. So thank you, Chelsea. This was after she has been a producer-level patron for 6 months. So, and her pick was Jackie Brown. So really, really excited. Great pick. I'm stoked to talk about this. I feel like this is a... Tarantino, obviously, huge filmmaker, hasn't made that many films. All his films get talked about, except for maybe this one. So really excited to delve into it. But yeah, if you guys want to suggest a film to us, become a producer, and it's just $5 a month to be at that producer level, and you can have us talk about a film after being at that level for just 6 months. So we look forward to having more films picked for us by you guys. But back to Jackie Brown. What do you guys think of this film?
It's the least Tarantino movie of Tarantino. And I think that's why it's kind of like under the radar for even like Tarantino fans. This was my first time watching it. And outside of, yes, there's a foot, like a long ass foot shot 5 minutes in. And then also, like, the twist at the end. I would say that the rest of it is very, like, more so, like, a slower burn. Like, while Tarantino's movies are slow burns, it is... I don't know. It's more so, I think, because, like, Tarantino kind of like has this aspect of, like, snarkiness and his writing and things like that. And you get kind of, like, senses of that. But not as much as, like, other Tarantino movies. And, like, definitely not cinematic as a Tarantino movies, like... of like quick shots or zoom ins and zoom outs and all that he kind of like plays around with in his other films. So that I think that might also be why I did enjoy it, but it was like, yeah, in the middle kind of like dragged on a bit. Kind of like it's kind of hard to root for Jackie Brown themselves because it's kind of like she definitely got herself into this mess and like it was while I was impressive that she was playing all the sides when she did end up getting away with it, I think she just kind of like, you know, she was very much a person out for herself. And looking at who plays Jackie Brown herself and like seeing that is like Foxy Brown from the black exploitation era of films.
Yeah, Pam Grier, shout out. Great cast in this movie, and she's incredible.
Yeah, and she kind of, like, plays in... she's kind of, like, plays into, like, what Foxy Brown would become when she's older in her 40s or, you know, going on 50s. Would be kind of, like, this... still kind of, like, hustling and doing that kind of thing and then get finally scoring big and, like, riding off into the sunset. It was very interesting, like, yeah, to see... It was very, the character that kind of, like, was very interesting was Robert De Niro in the character that he is. Like, at the time, he wasn't really, like, played into that character. He's more so, like, you know, like, the aggressor, mobster. You get that instance at the end, but even that was kind of, like, kind of bumbling. Like, he's like, I didn't know what to do. I just shot her. I don't
that
know.
That scene where like, he's high like, and he can't figure out which side the phone goes on, I was cracking up. I was like, yeah. Is this my dad?
Yeah, and it's very much, it's kind of like a character that he plays into more so in his older years now, in present day. So it is very interesting that he kind of like played into. I would go so far as calling him a dumbass, you know, because he is a dumbass. Oh, yeah. Just like an aggressive dumbass. Like Samuel Jackson's character said, like you couldn't have just like
talked
the hell out of him. Yeah. Smacked her or, you know, beat the hell out of her. No, you shot her. Like, why? What the fuck was that? You know, so in that moment was very Tarantino-ish of like, but it wasn't as like blunt and playful as like a Tarantino movie really kind of sort of is. Like, I was thinking like other Tarantino movies where, you know, when that kind of thing had happened, they would be like, well, shit. kind of thing. to see, yeah, like Samuel L. Jackson's character like actually like get pissed off and like kill like that. But that's like, I enjoyed that kind of thing of like, and it showed that's like how his character trait was like from the beginning of like killing Chris Tucker's character, like just flat out. I was not expecting that. And yeah, like it was a very, for a Tarantino movie, it was simple. It was clean, mm-hmm. simple. Another clear Tarantino move was like the jumping back and forth from different perspectives about the same event, which happened in like the mall for the mm-hmm. actual drop. I was actually surprised now looking back at it that first woman that took the money from like the test drop, she actually took the money. I was like expecting her to like Jackie Brown got her and took that money too, kind of thing. And but yeah, it was very much a lot of like, even that for Jackie Brown as a character, she just a lot of dominoes had to fall, and they did fall how she needed them to. Mm-hmm. Which was like very, she's more so like lucky that she got away with it than like being like a strategic kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Which we kind of
column A, a little column B, you know?
yeah. But a lot more than like other like Tarantino kind of like mm-hmm. characters in this instance, like with like Inglourious Basterds, like they stumbled themselves through, but like they like hit their mark. Like the trap was set and it closed on the Nazi guy and stuff like that. And so yeah, like it was very interesting. A very interesting movie. Like yeah, it's like it's the lightest Tarantino movie for sure.
Alan, how about you? I know you're a Tarantino guy, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Funny enough, I have a quick little story. Today at work, I texted you guys earlier, but at work, I didn't mention it to anybody. No one at all. I almost kind of forgot what we were doing today. And we have like a tri-weekly lunch where our department gets together and, you know, the company buys us lunch. That's pretty much it. And we're sitting there, or I'm sitting there, and like one half of the room, out of fucking nowhere, no, I didn't say one word. I was eating my sandwich, and they just go, Jackie Brown. Okay, who thinks Jackie Brown is like the most underrated Quentin Tarantino movie? And I was like, what the fuck? Okay. And they go have this whole conversation about it. They're all talking about Tarantino. And like, at that point, I was like, I think I'm just gonna like put my phone down and record you guys for the episode because you guys are doing everything for me. But obviously, I can't do that because we're the podcasters. But no, I just thought that was like a funny coincidence.
I'm just imagining like the first scene of Reservoir Dogs. You got, but instead of like talking about Madonna, you guys are talking about Jackie Brown.
Yeah, I didn't even like jump into the conversation until like way later. Like I was sitting just listening, and they're like, "Oh yeah, Jackie Brown," da, 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 and they're like talking about that. Like they're just going all out, and like mm-hmm. the CEO of the art department company, whatever, he just throws it out. Jackie Brown is the most underrated Quentin Tarantino movie. And I was like, well, there it is. He did my job. Cool. But yeah, then I jumped in and then we started talking about our favorites, which I'll bring up later on in the show. But yeah, I thought that was just so funny and like coincidental. Like I was like, I'm going to be talking exactly about that. But yeah, it is the most least Tarantino of all his films. But I guess what's really cool is that he's adapting a novel, Rum Punch.
Right, exactly. Elmore and Leonard.
Exactly, yeah. And it's really cool that, like, we haven't really seen him adapt anything. Like, you know, you've heard you know, every now and again, he's like, yeah, maybe I'll do a Star Trek movie or something like that. Or he'll be like, maybe I'll do this or that. Like, I think he even said Friday the 13th. I'm not sure. He said a horror movie. But, and I've always been curious to see that. But at the same time, we've actually kind of already seen him adapt a novel film. So I think the beauty of the film is that he's able to take the good points of the novel and then do his stuff. Because you can tell, like, in certain scenes, the way the characters talk, you're like, that's very Tarantino. That's super, like, his style, his direction, the way they act with each other. I'm just like, oh, yeah, that's absolutely him. But it's really nice to see him adapting somebody else's work. But, yeah, I will say it's not my favorite. It's probably, like, at the bottom of the list. And it's not horrible whatsoever. It's not, no way is it a bad film at all. It's just, like Ariel was saying, it's the least Tarantino. And all his other stuff is just way better. But yeah, Pam Grier, I mean, just knocks it out of the park. I think she's absolutely wonderful. I have the biggest crush on her in this film. She's absolutely stunning. Like, oh my god. Like, at the end of the movie where she's like, you want to go to Madrid? I was like, I'll go with you. Fucking yeah. Kind of thing. So beautiful. But yeah, and then Max, I forgot the actor's name. He just has such, he's a
Robert Forster.
Robert Forster. He
legendary character actor. Legendary character actor.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, no, he. God damn, both of them had absolutely great chemistry, and his acting was so, like, I love. I think the. I mean, it's probably the highlight of the film is like the dressing room scene and everything like that. I just love how cool he is. He's not like every other character is like stressed and everybody's kind of like, you know, Robert De Niro's like sweating and he's like, oh my God, I got to do this. And then Pam Grier's kind of like, she has like that like anxiety of like, oh shit, I hope it works out. He's cool as a cucumber. Just so fucking chill. So relaxed. Just like, I kind of always forget he's a bell bondsman. I'm like, dude, you should be like an agent. Like, how are you not Michael Keaton's character kind of thing? And that's very funny. Seeing Michael Keaton, like, he's like kind of like thinner in this movie, and I'm just like,
with like 5 years ago, was he riding a motorcycle or was he riding a bike in those shorts? Because he should not have been. He had a motorcycle helmet, I think, when he came in one time to the station or wherever they're at their offices, and he had a motorcycle helmet and I think like a leather jacket, but then he was wearing like biker shorts. And I'm like, dude, what are you riding a motorcycle on, like, with the biker shorts and stuff?
Oh, that's right. He does have the shorts. It's Michael Keaton. He's showing off his ass. He's like, you know what? I mean, I had a bunch of...
He's like, hey, you want to see these nuts?
Hey, come on. See these nuts. But, I mean, he was clad in leather just 5 years prior. So he's probably like, I want to show off my bod. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, my ass is hidden by a cape. Like, let's go. Kind of thing. Yeah, Michael Keaton's great. Yeah, dude, I mean, it's Quentin Tarantino's direction. He just gets it. But yeah, that the highlight of the film was that, you know, the whole dressing room heist stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, Derek, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree with pretty much everything you guys said. I think, yeah, I was going to kind of lead with what you were saying, Alan, that, yeah, this is definitely the least Tarantino of Tarantino's films, and I think the big reason is because it's his only one that he adapts from someone else's work. As you mentioned, he adapts it from Rum Punch, and I think Elmore Leonard is one of these guys, like we've talked about, like Neil Gaiman, or one of these guys who writes books, but they are like very, very adaptable. Like, he's been adapted, like they've made like 20 movies based off of his books. They've made 7 TV shows, including some of my favorite films and TV shows of all time, 310 to Yuma, the remake, Justified, the TV show, one of my all-time favorite shows, just a ton of great stuff. And I think because of that, I think Tarantino has definitely a very house style where his films are very elevated and they're very cinematic. They're very much drawing you to the artifice of like, this is a movie, this is cinema. And this is not doing it. There's maybe a couple moments where it's a little bit showy, but it's very much like, hey, this is just a very kind of, I would say it's definitely his most mature movie. And that's not to say like his other ones are immature or something, but they're like a kid, you know, like in a playground, like if you could, like, you know, shoot a bunch of Nazis and stuff like that and kill Hitler, like, yeah, great. This one, though, is just like, here's an adult story, and it's because it is based on the novel. So, yeah, I really appreciate all of that. Funnily enough, speaking of the fact that this is an adaptation of an Elmore Leonard novel, did you guys know that just a couple years later, there was another novel that was based on another movie that was based on an Elmore Leonard novel that once again had Michael Keaton playing the same character, because they're like, oh, we've got Steven Soderbergh was adapting Out of Sight, and so and Ray Nicolette is a character in that, so he's like, well, I guess they've already been a perfect Ray Nicolette and Jackie Brown, so he brought him back. But yeah, like this movie, it's just, you know, you guys said it all.
Did it come out like 10 years ago?
It was 90, or maybe this or was not.
I'm thinking of something. Maybe I'm thinking of something else.
Yeah, it was in the 90s. It was about the same time as this one. But I wanted to watch it beforehand to just kind of compare the styles, because, you know, same character adapted from the same author. But, you know, very obviously Soderbergh and Tarantino, very different styles. I just didn't get a chance to watch it beforehand. But yeah, like I said, you guys said it all. This is just a really solid movie. It's got a great ensemble of characters that it's just kind of, you know, there's big chunks of the movie, especially the beginning, where you don't even see Jackie, where it's just you're getting introduced to this other cast of characters. And they all kind of just end up, like you said, Ariel, more so than her plan, they end up just kind of fucking themselves over and like shooting each other and doing stupid stuff. And I think that a big part of that is a big part of the theme is something you had alluded to, Alan, which is that everyone in this movie, except for Max and Jackie, are trying to prove that they're so cool. You know, Samuel Jackson's constantly trying to seem that he's cool. De Niro is trying to prove that he's this awesome guy. And then once he starts getting made a fool out of, he ends up shooting Bridget Fonda's character, Melanie. Melanie's trying to seem like she's really cool. But these guys, they're just really cool, and they don't have to try. Like, I love that moment when, you know, earlier on, like, Sam Jackson yells at De Niro, is like, look at me when I'm talking to you. And De Niro's trying to, like, oh, I'll do it, but I'm trying to be so cool. It's this machismo that he's putting on. And then when he does it to Robert Foster, he just kind of glances over like, I don't need to impress you, man. Sure, you say, look at you. I'll look at you. And they're both just, they're just cool. They're not trying to put on, even Ray Nicolette is like, hey, what's up? Hey, it's me. I'm a guy. Come on, Jackie. I'm going to put,
hey, it's me, big, Batman.
Hey, yeah. Eddie, I'm going to talk right, to you with the chair turned around.
Come on.
Yeah, come on. Hey, I guess that supports the story. You know, everybody
I'm
is
the
just,
bat.
Yeah, hey, I'm the bat. Everybody's just trying to be so fucking cool, but these guys are just sly as shit. And I love how subtle their romance is. Like, the whole movie, you're like, oh my gosh, oh, the chemistry is on fire. And then they have that kiss, and then they have another kiss, and you like
it's you're just so like, passionate, dude. Right? And I'm like, dude, fucking go with her, please. Yes. Like, I usually don't care for romance, but like this type where the chemistry is so good. Mm-hmm. And, but you know what? I think it's because now that I've seen the movie, they don't get together and she goes and does her own thing. I think I love that, like, passing ships. Mm-hmm. So I'm just fuck, like, god damn it. That was also too, because she's just fucking hot. So I'm like, go, please. And then, I don't know, I love that that like passing ships thing where it's like, check you later, you know, see you around. Well, what's a fucking, see you around, kid, or whatever.
Yeah, like, I love those brief encounter things. You know, that's like a big favorite of mine. And yeah, it's such a light touch, their romance. And just like everything else in this movie, this is Quentin is used, like, you know, Quentin, he goes hard usually, but in this one, he had a very light touch. So it was really nice to see a different side of Quentin Tarantino. And I think that's the real reason this is so underrated, because you don't think of this as a Tarantino movie. I think it's more of an Elmore Leonard movie, but, you know, still Tarantino's great in it, or he's great directing it.
And I think too, he was probably challenging himself because he has two big bangers right out of the bank. Mm-hmm. He has Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction. And I think, I was thinking about this earlier when I was leaving work. I was like, he's a young director. He's hot. So at that time, they're like, all right, you got Reservoir Dogs, you got Pulp Fiction. He probably was like, I need to slow down. I need to change it up. Because they're kind of similar in a weird way, those two. And I think he's, because I feel like with starting directors, there's always like two things. They either go for like balls to the wall, or they go for mature, very like quality. I don't know how to explain, but like he had those two bangers and he's like, all right, now I got to challenge myself as a director. Just like Kevin Smith kind of comes to mind. He had two comedies, you know, he had Clerks and Mallrats. And then he's like, all right, I'm going to fucking push the boundary with Dogma. He like challenged himself to be like, Chasing Amy. I think it was Chasing Amy. After those two, which Chasing Amy is more of like a dramedy about, you know, sexuality, where like he challenged himself to be like, all right, I have to try something different, not be safe. So I think Tarantino went with Jackie Brown and being like, on top of not writing it, or he wrote it and adapted it, but like he adapted a novel and was like, I have to somehow put my style into it, but also put respect on the novel. I don't know how much he adapted from it, like down to the T, because I never read the novel, but I feel like he definitely was like, I need to challenge myself as a filmmaker, as a writer, director, everything, to be like, let's see what I can do with this. And I felt like he did a great job. I don't know how well it did the box office. I think
because it had a pretty modest budget, despite, I think it's one of those movies where like it has a great cast, but it's a bunch of people who are like, yeah, I want to work with Tarantino, you know. So it only had a budget of $12 million, so, and it made about 75, so you know, huge box office success, one of those movies that comes in under budget, it seems like one of those movies that everybody wanted to kind of like be a part of. And then, yeah, so you make, like, you know, same way, speaking of Soderbergh always does that. It's definitely one of his smaller movies. Like, this, you know, other than, I think, maybe his first film, this probably has the smallest budget of any of his movies. Because he could have made, you know, he would often make these big, big movies, but he wanted to do something different, and I really respect that.
I respect that, too. I love that. I really love that. It's not like, I've never heard anybody say that Jackie Brown's their favorite Tarantino film, but I feel like it has like the utmost respect for most Tarantino like fans. Like they all kind of go like, yeah, it's not my favorite, but I dig it. It's good. I appreciate that about him a lot.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I think it really would qualify as underrated, because I feel like he's such a household name that you say, even people who aren't film buffs, you'd be like Reservoir Dogs or Glorious Bastards, they're going to know that movie. But like, I was just watching it and my roommate had never heard of it, you know? So I think film people know this movie for sure, but I think to the common everyday person, they might not.
I agree with that. And it's just, it's definitely like, I think for that reason, like if you come across this movie on a shelf, you know, like, you know, back in the day, or even now streaming, you know, like come across the tile and stuff, you don't see Tarantino in it. Like you just see it as like, oh, okay, this is like an 80s. Like I said, like on the verge of like that kind of like Shaft blaxploitation kind of feel to it with the Jackie Brown character and even like Samuel Jackson's character with the ponytail. Like, even my brother, you know, he came in like halfway through. He's like, why does he have this ponytail? And it's like, I love that at the beginning, like, of all people, like, of course, Chris Tucker's gonna, the character is gonna like comment on it. Like, he's like, you ponytail, stuff like that, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, it is definitely, and even then, like when he has it down, like at the end, it's like so inert, because it's like, you don't see Samuel L. Jackson like with that hair kind of thing ever. You know, he either, but I do like that this was kind of like this was I don't know if it was the start. I'm sure he's like, I'm gonna be wearing these, because like he probably is already wearing them, but he, of course, he's carried them in his, you know, in his legacy as Samuel L. Jackson. But the Kangols,
the Kangols.
Wearing those, so I was like, okay, at least we have that element of Samuel L. Jackson kind of thing. But like the ponytail just kind of takes it away, because it's like the most, like, he is Samuel, like classic Samuel L. Jackson, but then he's also like, he's like, oh, but like he's like a dumber version, because like Samuel Jackson's character is like, even in like Django Unchained, like they are like disastrously plotting. They are kind of like they are pretty smart, and this character is just he is kind of dumb, and so yeah, it's kind of like out of touch with like Samuel Jackson, and especially Samuel Jackson in a Tarantino movie, you know.
Kind yeah. of. What was his line? It's my ass may be dumb, but I'm not a dumbass. I thought that was such a good line. Yeah. Yeah, and it's just so you know, like, I do really like that all this stuff you're talking about, Ariel, that it is a real throwback to, like, these 70s blaxploitation films. Like, obviously you can be like, oh yeah, this is a movie that's from the 90s, it's set in the 90s, but it really does feel, down to, like, the music, the way that it's shot with, like, these wonders and everything, it really, and, you know, Sam Jackson, Pam Grier, it does feel super reminiscent of those movies, and I don't want to place too much praise on it for this, but it was... Like, this is the first time Tarantino was like, hey, this is a movie that's not about just a bunch of white dudes, you know? He's like, mm-hmm. let's have a black female lead. And then, obviously, you know, he would have a female lead again in Kill Bill. He would have a black lead again in Django Unchained. So, and he did get a little flack from, you know, like, Spike Lee and stuff like that for this movie.
Yeah, but I heard about that.
Yeah. That's the whole thing, you know?
Well, even the poster, like, with which is, like, she's not even actually shooting the gun, but it's a shot of Jackie Brown, like, with the gun, like, whipped out, and then in the actual movie, it's, which is a very blaxploitation image of, like, a, you know, a black woman or a black man, like, with a gun kind of thing, like, you know, shooting, like, kind of like the Charlie Angel move, but then in the movie itself, it's, like, oh, she's just kind of like prepping herself to do that. And that moment too is like she's prepping herself to do that, but then she has like she ends up like calling the cops, like essentially like, oh, he got a gun kind of thing. So it's like, why did she even practice? It's like it going back. It's like Jackie Brown as a character is like, yeah, she's kind of complex kind of thing. Yeah. It's because it's like, well, why even think that? Like, and it goes back to like what I was saying of like, while she comes across as like knowing what she's doing, there's these like moments and things that pop up where she kind of doesn't, you know, she's is like, yeah, like somewhat winging it. And like, even in that moment, like going back to what you were saying, Derek, is like, she's acting like she has something to prove in that, in at least that moment. And like, I wouldn't call that moment as kind of like being cool. It's kind of like acting cool, like you were saying. And that was the only moment that, like, she did that. And so maybe with her not doing that and then and actually, like, calling the cops, it's kind of, like, maybe showing, like, her regaining that cool, that actual cool.
One thing I wonder, too, is just, like, did she just maybe think these people are all dumb, they're going to implode? Like, if I just live them to their devices, if I, you know, flip Melanie some extra money, they'll just eat each other, because she knows that they're all idiots. Like, I wonder if that's like she's just kind of counting on everybody fucking up and fucking themselves over and just cannibalizing each other.
Think so, because she does give like Melanie Samuel Jackson the amount that she tells the cops. So like,
yeah,
so whichever situation that they found them, she was just banking on that they would find them in some way. You know, so they were going to find them with the $50,000 anyway. And I think that the few things that she was like had to be banking on to go follow through was like one, Cherry following through with his and mailing, which is like insane, like mailing money. Like, yeah. I don't see that's a little bending of reality. Like, even back then, like, you would not be physically able to mail money like that.
Could you Venmo me? Jackie,
yeah, that's not even Robert that, person. Not even that, but, like, but anyway. And then, so she was banking on that, and then she was banking on Samuel Jackson never talking to the police, because all he had to say is, like, my half mil... And the gig was up for her part, and like with the cops, like they would have thought like, you took money, so yeah, she was banking on a lot, and like but I think that she just had to like get Samuel Jackson to not talk to the cops, and that's like all she needed to do. And they just kind of imploded on it. Worked out for her favor, but I don't think that she was like banking on them imploding on themselves.
I like to believe there was a lot of luck, just a lot of luck, because I don't think any of these characters were like master strategists or clever. I think maybe Max and Jackie were just a little bit smarter, but by a hair. And it was a lot of luck. It was a lot of luck. That's what I think. Because I feel like a lot of the characters are really grounded in reality, almost like too relatable, where you're like, I feel like I might know some of these people in real life. So you're kind of like, I don't think this would have happened completely on purpose. It's pure luck. And the mailing of the money thing reminds me of Wolf of Wall Street, where they're taping the money on themselves to go to Sweden or whatever and put their money over there in a bank. And I was like, these people aren't smart. They're fucking dumb. So I was like, I think it's just everybody was banking. I think they were just going all in. Going in all in blind and hoping that the river was going to give them everything they needed for their cards. I really think that's what it was.
Yeah, no, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, just definitely, yeah, gambling and hope it paid off. So then overall, you know, I know you kind of alluded to it, Alan, and we're kind of hinting at it. Where would you guys say this ranks for you in terms of Tarantino movies?
At the end, I think the worst thing that he's done is Death Proof, which is like, you know, the half part of really you like Death Proof?
Oh my goodness.
No, I've never seen it. That's the one Tarantino thing I haven't seen, because I'm like, this is not a full movie.
Oh,
it's,
man.
It is the most Tarantino. I will give you that. It's very
so this is
Tarantino.
The least Tarantino, and that's the most Tarantino, right?
Yeah, so you gotta hit a middle ground Tarantino. Like Death Proof is like overboard Tarantino.
How many feet like close ups of people driving are there in that movie?
There's a scene, I'll
bring it up later, but there's a scene where stuntman, like, it's a lot of character development. That film is like, it's like a very, very, very slow moving slasher film, but it's like a lot of character development. And there's a scene where Mary Elizabeth Winstead is hanging out on the back of a car, but her feet are out the window, and there's a perfect camera shot of her feet. And then Stuntman Mike, Kurt Russell's character, comes and like literally just like caresses her feet and like walks
away.
There you go.
The only way it could be more Tarantino is if he said the N-word while he was doing it.
They had reserved documents. I would put Jackie Brown ahead. Like you said, it's not a bad movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, yeah, like it's not Tarantino kind of thing. Yeah, I'm like kind of like looking at the discography and stuff. But yeah. So I it's just because of like Tarantino only has like what, 7 films? Or 6?
I think it's 9.
It depends on how you count them, but yeah, there's 9.
You categorize Kill Bill as 1.
Yeah, that's how he counts them. Because his whole thing is I'm only going to make 10 films. And I mean, the last one's going to be the film critic, and then I'm going to be done. And so like he counts Kill Bill as 1. He doesn't count Four Rooms, and he doesn't count.
I agree with that. Four Rooms, I wouldn't count.
And then he doesn't. There's one he wrote but didn't direct, which I'm spacing on right now. He doesn't count that one either.
Total Romance? No, something.
Oh, True Romance. True
Romance.
Romance.
There you go. True Romance. Yeah.
So yeah. But yeah, Alan.
Yeah, this one I would put it at the bottom. Again, it's not a bad film. Not a bad film whatsoever. It's just because I was going to ask you guys your top 3 Tarantino films, and I know Derek said he haven't seen Death Proof, so it's okay. You can, you know, knock that one out. But yeah, for me, I noticed I kind of like the more violent, but I love when he uses influence from other genres a lot. Like he's really great at melding genres, and he does a really good job about it. And I think Jackie Brown is just the least Tarantino, like you guys were saying. And it's just a great solid film, but it's just not a film that I catch myself going, oh, I want to go rewatch it. You know, like, mm-hmm. I sometimes I go, oh, I kind of want to go watch, you know, the fucking 20-hour cut of Hateful Eight more than Jackie Brown.
Really? Okay. That's the one Tarantino that I don't love.
That's funny because it's not funny. A lot of people say that. They actually don't like that as much. I thought it was really enjoyable. I don't think it's, like, high on my list, but I would watch Hateful Eight more than Jackie Brown. But, yeah, I guess going into my question, what is your guys' top three? Because this got brought up at work when I jumped into this conversation, kind of going back to the story I told. When we were talking about it, they asked me, they're like, what are your top three? Because some guy was like, what are my covers? Like, oh, Inglourious Basterds, number one, best fucking Tarantino, blah, blah, blah. But that one's not even in my top three. So I want to hear what your guys' top three Tarantino movies are.
Enjoy Hateful Eight. I do, yeah, like so I might be in the minority, but I've never seen the 20 hour one, but I enjoy the storytelling of Hateful Eight. I love how it's like it's like narrated in like a chapter wise kind of thing, and then it is very much it's
also like a stage play almost.
Oh yeah, stage play. It's all it takes place essentially all in one room. There's so many like comedic kind of like callbacks and stuff like that, like with this one character having to go out all this time, and then like with the it is like yeah, a stage play because there's like all these things happening.
Very Wes Anderson.
Like with things. I would say more so, and then also has that Soderbergh which with like Oceans kind of thing where there's a lot of callbacks, like it'll like the whole thing with like her brother Gormagoo's brother being in the cellar, and then that whole payoff with like he pops up, it's Channing Tatum, oh shit, boom, like it's the most Tarantino, like I love that Tarantino where it's just like we're gonna throw in somebody and like no, it's he's gone, like we'll kill him right away.
Is that your three?
I think that would be my two. I'm kind of thinking. Well, no, it would be my three. I think it would be my three. I think Inglourious Basterds might kind of kick in at two, and then Kill Bill 1 and 2, volume 1 and 2. I think would be my top, just because Kill Bill is such an epic story, and and also going back to like Hateful Eight, it is very much like it is episodic in a way, with like there's like chapter one, chapter two, the bride kind of thing, and all that, and like and also love the idea of like a kill list kind of crossing off people and things like that. So yeah,
I need to rewatch Hateful Eight. Like, I don't hate the movie; it just didn't hit me the same way as all his other ones. So I should check out like the Netflix miniseries like that you were talking about that they made it into, Alan. But yeah, for me, my top three actually. Yeah, I was gonna say this is my number four. So this is like hanging out right outside of those. I really like this movie a lot. I mean, I haven't rewatched some of his stuff in a while, so that might not change. That might change, but I do really, really enjoy this movie. But like ahead, the three I'd say I put ahead of it. Number three I would say is definitely Kill Bill, the 1 and 2, which you know definitely go check out the episode me and Ariel did of You've Never Seen, because that was like the one of the last things I got to see of Tarantino was both Kill Bills. Had a lot of fun watching those. It always fluctuates my number 1 and 2 on every given day. Like. He started, so I'll say today, Reservoir Dogs, he started his career with such a bang. Like, that first film, like, right out of the gate. Like, I know everybody loves to say that Pulp Fiction's a better, like, better than Reservoir Dogs. I really like Reservoir Dogs a lot better than Pulp Fiction, which is probably my number five, honestly. It's also great, but I love Reservoir Dogs. But number one, it's Inglourious Basterds. Like, that movie, it's everything I ever wanted from a Tarantino movie. You know, it was the last film that he got to do with his longtime cinematographer or his longtime editor, Sally Menke, before she passed away. And, you know, so it's so good. It really catches you by surprise that ending in a way that you tried to replicate later, but you kind of knew it was coming because you'd seen the other one. But it's so perfect. And I love, you know, the way, and then Brad Pitt like looks into the directly in the camera's like, I think this might be my masterpiece. And that's Quentin. And then he says, directed by Quentin Tarantino. And you're like, it's that's him telling you this is his masterpiece. And you know what, Quentin? I agree.
Well, I will say, and I got a huge guffaw at work when I said my top three. Number three, Death Proof. I fucking love Death Proof. It's the closest to a horror film Tarantino ever
did. That's why I'm not surprised. That's why I'm not surprised.
It's so good. Grindhouse was
so insane. Like, just the whole, the double feature of Grindhouse. Both movies are so insane.
I thought Planetary was meh. I thought it was okay. Not my favorite, but yeah, it was funny because when I got shown it, our old co-host Fred, he was like, yeah, dude, we can watch both of them together. He's like, I'll show you Planetary. It's the better one. And then he's like, we'll watch Death Proof after, because if you fall asleep, it's okay. Fucking love Death Proof. I was like, this shit's way fucking better than Planetary. I love it just because it's all fucking real. Like, the last 20 minutes of that film is absolutely edge of your seat, fucking just pure raw adrenaline, gas, tires, metal. Dude, it's so fucking good. Amazing stunt work. Just, oh my god. And then the ending is just so perfectly satisfying. I know people complain a little bit about Stuntman Mike being a little bit of a spoiler. He's not as, like, cool as people thought. I thought it was perfect for his character because I was like, yeah, he's a piece of shit. Like, what do you expect? But Kurt Russell fucking kills it. All the girls, Rosario Dawson, Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Oh my god, I forgot her name. She's a stunt woman who plays a stunt woman.
Zoe Bell.
Thank you. Yeah. She does a fucking amazing job.
It's Quinn's just like, you've got the best feet in the game. I'm going to put you in every movie.
Fuck yeah, dude. And I love it. She shows up in Django, and I was like, fuck yeah, I know that's her. Great. Like, I just, it's great, man. It's so fucking good. It's just, like, no CGI, practical stunt work. Fucking great. Django Unchained, number two. I love Django. I quote the fuck out of it with my buddies. I think it might be one of my absolute favorite Westerns, or as Quentin calls it, a Southern. It's just great, man. I love it. The action's great. I love the story. I will say the whole plot to get Django's wife is a little kind of convoluted, almost.
Yeah,
it's a lot of work.
But one of the best scenes though with the whole KKK scene with whole bags and stuff.
Oh my
stuff,
god, I forgot about that scene. It's so
and
good.
Jonah Hill. Yeah. Like, who made these? And like the hole's all messed up. He's like, my wife worked so hard on this. Fuck you guys. And then he rides off. Yeah.
Christoph Waltz, Jamie Foxx, kill it. You know, they did that. Leo DiCaprio, Sam Jackson. Mm-hmm. Dude, fuck
oh my god.
Damn, everybody knocks out of the park.
Yeah,
with that one. And you know what? And then Quinn does a great job of, like, you really want Dr. King Schultz to live.
Oh,
kills him off,
man.
And it gives him a great send-off, and you're like, fuck. Like, I kind of love that tragedy of, like, dude, I love this character. You killed him off, but he was just such a badass. But, yeah, and then going into number one, Dr. King Schultz, there's a Easter egg in my number one, Kill Bill. That's my absolute favorite, Kill Bill, Volume 1 and 2. There's a grave where they put Beatrix Kiddo, spoilers, that's her name, the bride, into the ground. It's like, I think, a relative of Dr. King Schultz. It's, oh my god, it says it in the chapter. It's like Pamela Schultz or something like that. But they put her in that grave, so she's related to Schultz from Django.
That's cool. I love when he does that, because like all of his movies are set in the same, like, or like there's the realer than real universe and there's the universe, so it's like I love that he like is like thinking about all these connections in all of his movies. I think
like
that's
like a
so
descendant
cool.
of like Bear, like the Bear character in Inglourious Bastards, like one of his descendants is in like one of his other movies, I think. Or vice versa, or Bear is the descendant of like I think a character in Django, something like that, something connected with Bear from Inglourious Bastards.
And speaking of connections, what were you gonna say, Alan?
Oh no, I was gonna say, did I say Paula? Paula Schultz. That's the girl.
Okay.
And then just real fast, the Vega brothers, Vincent Vega, Pulp Fiction, and Mr. Blonde. He was Vega, Reservoir Dogs. Mm-hmm. But sorry, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, speaking of connections, I don't know about you guys, with Justified coming back, I'm really hoping that maybe we can get, because Keaton, he's coming back. He's reprising roles that he did early in his career recently. So let's get him back. Let's get him play Ray Nicolette one more time, one more Fort of the Road. on Justified in another Elmore Leonard thing, because I think it's he like does Ray, too, like, open that.
But was Ray like Nicolette more so like a California agent?
I don't. Well, I know because. Cause, they mentioned Detroit happens. In this movie.
Yeah.
They mentioned because like and that's a big thing is the Detroit Mafia is Justified, and I think De Niro was from Detroit, so like it, you know, it all connects. You know, it's all one big thing. I love it. The original cinematic universe.
Hell yeah, but yeah, no, glad to hear you guys. Goddamn, dude, I'm not gonna lie, I'm kind of glad they recommended this because this is like I feel. Doing an underrated podcast is kind of tough to do Tarantino because they're all bangers. So it was nice to be able to do this because, like, yeah, you can't be like, oh, Pulp Fiction's underrated or Django's underrated. They're all fucking great. Mm-hmm. You know? Maybe Hateful Eight. I sometimes think Death Proof is underrated,
it's,
but...
Like, I'm very surprised that Hateful Eight's not... Because I thoroughly enjoyed.
I think a lot of people do what I do, which is the qualifier. It's like, I like it, just not as much as the other Quentin movies. But yeah, I think this one's definitely, like your co-workers are saying, like, this is the underrated, for sure, Tarantino movie. It just, nobody talks about it. Like, everyone talks about Tarantino. And it's part of it, I think, is because Tarantino's movies, like, everyone talks about movies in all of them. And so, like, that's just kind of, you know, life imitating art, imitating life, imitating art over and over again. This one doesn't really go down that path. Like, there's a couple scenes where he's like, I'm gonna go see some movie. That's about it. But yeah, I don't know. Any final thoughts on Jackie Brown?
Enjoyable. I mean, like, yeah, when you said that it's from the writer from Justified, I kind of understand a lot more. Because it is, like, yeah, it is kind of that kind of beat of a story, for sure. Which Justified also has, like, bad guys who are dumb as hell, but they somehow stumble into victory, but then stumble out of it just as quickly. So yeah.
No, that's great, man. Definitely check it out if you haven't seen it. Yeah, I mean, I feel like a lot of people's lists of like Tarantino fans, I feel like this is always there. You know, they're like, I've seen all of them except Jackie Brown.
Right.
It's always Jackie Brown or Death Proof. It's always Jackie Brown or Death Proof. And I'm like, well, go out and watch both of them. Instead of watching Planet Terror and Death Proof, no, go watch Jackie Brown and Death Proof, because like Ariel said, it's both sides of that spectrum. It's the least Tarantino, the most Tarantino.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's well said. But yeah, thank you guys once again, and thank you to everyone for listening, and one more time, thank you to Chelsea for suggesting this one to us.
Thank you so much, Chelsea.
Yeah. So shout out. We would love to get some more, like we said at the top. Sign up for our Patreon if you want to be a $5 producer and suggest this to us. If not, you know, we also have just a $1 tier. If five is a little too rich for your blood. And then you get access to our bonus podcast, the Undercast Film Club, that we do whenever there's something we want to discuss that wouldn't fit onto Underrated or you've never seen or anything like that. We talk about it there. We just did recently an episode talking about our top theatrical film going experiences. That was a lot of fun. And sometimes there's some other cool stuff. Sometimes if I'm able to edit them quick enough, I'll put those episodes out early for the patrons. So you get those, if you are a patron, get access to episodes of Underrated before anyone else. So look us up under Cast Company on Patreon, as well as Instagram, Facebook, all the places. TikTok now, we're doing the film microdose film reviews on TikTok. Alan just did one not too long ago on The Flash. That was really cool.
Number one box office making film in the world, or well, not in this universe, unfortunately.
Hey, it at least it beat Elemental.
Yeah, like I guess. I mean, but go check out the review. I love it.
Yeah, definitely, definitely check it out. But yeah, we do a lot of other stuff as well. I do my podcast, the other podcast I do, where I'm the co-host along with my buddy Damien. Can I Say Something? And then, of course, Ariel has her podcast.
Podcast of You've Never Seen comes out on the first of every month. And wherever you hear and listen to podcasts, go and check that out. And yeah, I enjoy the discussions I always have. They're always really fun.
Yep. So look forward to that. And then just I want to shout out a couple podcasts that I was on recently. By the time this episode drops, the episode should be out of where I got to go on the podcast No Highway option, where the premise is they talk about films and compare them to the movie The Pacifier starring Vin Diesel, and it's a lot of fun, except for I had to watch The Pacifier, and then I had to watch New Moon, which was the movie I was comparing it to. But that was a lot of fun. Those weird, both bizarre, fun, not good movies to talk about. And then I was also on the U-Man podcast. That's Y-O-O-M-A-N, where I got to talk about film. And so that was a lot of fun. So check both those shows out. Check out all our stuff, of course. Check out You've Never Seen. And until then, I'll see you guys all next time.
Bye. Thanks for being amazing.
Take it easy, everybody. Have a good one.